continue talking to Catherine for another 45, 50 minutes or so on the same topic on our podcast. It's online at Radio.
You're listening to WGXC, Accra, 90.7 FM.
On Sunday evening at 6 o'clock right here on WGXC. You can tune in to listen to the program Lawful and Humane. On this program, you will hear music, found sounds, intentional noise, words, field recordings, all together, all at once. Tune in to Lawful and Humane, live radio from Hudson, New York. On WGXC 90.7 FM.
Berlin pianist Niels Frum is known for his intimate and spontaneous concerts, and on the next Deep Threes, we'll hear an impromptu composition. Plus, music from Max Richter, Ylang Ylang, Sky Thing, and Maya Beiser. Deep Threes. Music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, art house films, live music, and more, plus advance notice of close-up series conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Saugerties, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org. That's upstatefilms.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Stephanie Medlock of LaPorte, Indiana. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Grabbable, handleable, listener-fueled radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Tiffany Greenwald Simon reports at HudsonValley360.com. that the Columbia County Board of Supervisors County Government Committee wants to spend up to $350,000 to replace security cameras at several county buildings. The security camera replacements would be in Hudson, at the Columbia County Courthouse at 401 Union Street, the Department of Social Services, 25 Railroad Avenue, the Columbia County Department of Health, 325 Columbia Street, the Columbia County Department of Motor Vehicles, 560 Warren Street, the Columbia County Treasurer's Office, 50 North 6th Street, Columbia County Offices at 401 State Street, the Columbia County Solid Waste Department, 51 Newman Road, and 11 Warren Street, recently purchased from Galvin Foundation. The new cameras would also read license plates and include facial recognition readers. Michael Chimides, Hudson's Third Ward supervisor, asked for more privacy guarantees, saying, and I quote, "What you're describing is not binding. That's why I want a policy. I can then go to my constituents and say, we're putting up these cameras, it's about security, and it's still about your privacy," end quote. Then the board approved buying the equipment, with Columbia County Board of Supervisors Chair Matt Murrell recommending that the cameras do not go live until the board creates a privacy policy. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Brendan J. Lyons reports in the Times Union that Governor Kathy Hochul's appointment, Stephen G. James, started as superintendent of the state police on January 31st and immediately replaced many of the agency's top leaders. Lieutenant Colonel Christopher R. West, an assistant deputy superintendent, was named first deputy superintendent. James also appointed 7 new deputy superintendents, including in the Professional Standards Bureau, Field Command, Bureau of Criminal Investigation, Employee Relations, and Counterterrorism Unit. He cleared out Colonel Daniel J. Cooney, a deputy superintendent of Field Command, Colonel Robert G. Gregory, who had been deputy superintendent for administration, Colonel George K. Nohide, deputy superintendent of Employee Relations, and Lieutenant Colonel Jennifer H. Gottstein, an assistant superintendent of Employee Relations, to make way for the new hires. Hochul said of her new appointment, and I quote, "This will be our opportunity to lead a new generation. There's very few who have the experience Stephen brings to this job," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Abby Stanley reports for News 10 that Catskill High School students Madison Mudge, 11th grade, and Molly Oswald, 12th grade, will give vocal performances later this month at Carnegie Hall in Manhattan for the 2024 High School Honors Performance Series. Oswald performs with the mixed choir directed by Dr. Jeffrey Ames of Belmont University, and Mudge performs with the treble choir directed by Matthew Brady from the University of Miami. Both students also participated in the program last year. The two performances are open to the public on February 10th. Tickets are available through the Carnegie Hall box office. And you can read more about this story at the News 10 website. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
The road to death penalty abolition runs through Alabama and Oklahoma. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Countless cases lay bare the raw injustice of the death penalty in the United States. The case of Richard Glossop is certainly one of them. He's been on Oklahoma's death row since 1998, facing 9 separate execution dates. He's been given his final meal 3 times, and in 2015 was saved from death just hours before his execution, only after prison officials admitted they'd ordered the wrong drug for their lethal cocktail. Richard Glossop has always maintained his innocence in the 1997 murder of Barry Van Trees, who employed him as a motel manager in Oklahoma City. The flawed prosecution had no physical evidence linking him to the crime, only the testimony of the actual killer, Justin Sneed, another motel employee who'd already confessed to the crime implicated Glossop. In exchange, Sneed was able to avoid the death penalty. Last Monday, Richard Glossop was granted what might be his last lifeline. The U.S. Supreme Court, after issuing a stay of execution last May, announced it will hear his appeal. Even Oklahoma's elected Republican Attorney General, Gentner Drummond, is supporting Glossop's appeal. In agreeing to hear the case, The Supreme Court expects the parties to answer several questions, including, quote, whether due process of law requires reversal, where a capital conviction is so infected with errors that the state no longer seeks to defend it, unquote. In addition to Attorney General Drummond, a bipartisan group of Oklahoma state legislators is also advocating for Glossop. After Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt and the Oklahoma Pardon and Parole Board failed to act on the group's clemency recommendation, the legislators recruited the Reed Smith Law Firm to conduct a pro bono independent inquiry. Between June and September 2022, the law firm released four reports detailing flaws in the prosecution's case and Justin Snead's attempts to recant his testimony against Glossop and the prosecution's efforts to stop him from recanting. In their 343-page final report, Reed Smith attorneys detailed the case's many problems. They wrote, "The state's destruction and loss of key evidence before Glossop's retrial deprived the defense from using the evidence at trial and has deprived the defense today of the ability to perform forensic testing using DNA and technology advancements. The tunnel vision and deficient police investigation, the prosecution's failure to vet evidence and further distortion of it to fit its flawed narrative, and a cascade of errors and missed opportunities by defense attorneys fundamentally call into question the fairness of the proceedings and the ultimate reliability of the guilty verdict against Glossop for murder," they wrote. Since the Supreme Court stayed Glossop's execution last May, a Republican-led group of Oklahoma legislators formed a committee seeking a moratorium on the state's death penalty overall. The likelihood that Richard Glossop, an innocent man, could be executed was the primary motivation behind the effort. Oklahoma already imposed a brief execution moratorium after a botched execution in 2014 called into question the state's lethal injection protocol. Oklahoma lawmakers then passed a law that would allow the state to kill using an experimental technique referred to as nitrogen hypoxia, or nitrogen asphyxiation, which had never been used. Scores of workers have died in industrial accidents from nitrogen gas leaks and spilled liquid nitrogen, including six people who died at a poultry plant in Gainesville, Georgia, in 2021. Accidents like this have led those who defy execution methods to look to nitrogen as the latest foolproof method to kill. As of this writing, Alabama will be the first state to use nitrogen gas, with its scheduled execution of Kenneth Smith on January 25th. Smith survived Alabama's first attempt to kill him by lethal injection in November 2022. The executioners frantically sought a vein to deliver the deadly cocktail, resorting at one point to subjecting Smith, strapped to a gurney, to an inverted crucifixion position, as one person on the team repeatedly and painfully jabbed a needle under his collarbone. Even Alabama's ultra-conservative Republican governor, Kay Ivey, saw the need to explore alternative means of execution, hence this new foray into gassing people to death. Grotesque abuses of state power, as in Oklahoma and Alabama, are what led the late U.S. Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun to conclude in a dissenting opinion in a 1994 case, quote, "The death penalty remains fraught with arbitrariness, discrimination, caprice, and mistake," he said. Blackmun, a conservative when appointed by President Nixon in 1970, rendered increasingly liberal opinions during his tenure on the bench. He wrote the Roe v. Wade opinion, for example. In his 1994 death penalty dissent, Blackmun pledged, "From this day forward, I no longer shall tinker with the machinery of death," unquote. According to the Death Penalty Information Center, there are over 2,300 prisoners on death row in the United States. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
And now, here is your WGXC Weekend Weather Report.
The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting a mostly sunny Saturday with a temperature high near 35 degrees and a north wind at 9 to 11 miles per hour. Tonight it will be mostly clear with a temperature low of around 22 degrees and a north wind at around 8 miles per hour. Tomorrow on Sunday, it will be sunny with a temperature high near 38 degrees and a north wind at 7 to 9 miles per hour. And on Sunday night, it will be mostly clear with a temperature low of around 23 degrees. And on Monday, it will be sunny with a temperature high near 36 degrees. And that is your weekend weather report from WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
To avoid a wider war, ceasefire now in Gaza. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. On Tuesday, President Biden addressed the press while boarding the presidential helicopter, saying,
"I don't think we need a wider war in the Middle East. That's not what I'm looking for."
But a wider war is exactly what Biden's inflaming, with unreserved support for Israel's ongoing annihilation of Gaza and the 2.3 million Palestinians trapped there. Demands for an immediate ceasefire are growing, and despite promises of indefinite war from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the United States, as Israel's principal weapons provider, could shut down the bombardment with one phone call. Absent that, the widening war that Biden hopes to avoid seems ever more possible. Potential escalation was recently triggered by the killing of three U.S. Army reservists stationed at a base called Tower 22 in the Jordanian desert, near the Syrian and Iraqi borders. It houses approximately 350 U.S. Army and Air Force personnel. Together with another U.S. military garrison called Al-Tanf, about 20 kilometers to the north in Syria, these remote outposts are part of the U.S. military presence to counter the Islamic State. Early on Sunday, January 28th, a drone was able to penetrate the base's defenses, attacking the soldiers in their sleeping quarters. The three soldiers killed were Sergeant William Rivers, 46, Specialist Kennedy Sanders, 24, and Specialist Brianna Moffitt, 23. All three were from Georgia and were African American. An estimated 40 others were injured in the blast. Calls in the United States for swift reprisals grow, including demands that President Biden attack Iran. Pundits are quick to point out we're in an election year, and thus President Biden can't let himself be perceived as a weak military leader. Target Tehran, Republican Texas Senator John Cornyn said on social media, joined by fellow Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, stating, "The only thing the Iranian regime understands is force," unquote, and demanding the president, quote, "hit them now and hit them hard," unquote. But not everyone's demanding vengeance. Perhaps most powerfully and poignantly, the parents of one of the fallen soldiers. Moffitt's parents said they hope there's no escalation in violence that kills more American troops, the Associated Press reported. Francine Moffitt, the mother of Brianna Moffitt, told the Associated Press Monday, quote, "I just hope and pray no other family has to go through this. It takes your heart and your soul," she said. In addition to the intense assault on Gaza that followed Hamas's October 7th attack on Israel, military strikes have occurred across the wider Middle East. Israel and Hezbollah have exchanged artillery fire along the Lebanon-Israel border, claiming lives on both sides. Houthi rebels in Yemen have hit cargo vessels headed to or otherwise connected to Israel, the U.S., or the U.K. in the Gulf of Aden, and hijacked at least one vessel, disrupting international shipping through the vital Suez Canal. In response, the U.S. has launched multiple missile and artillery strikes on Yemen. Iran has hit targets in Iraq, Pakistan, and Syria. Adding to the volatility, Turkey has been stepping up its attacks on U.S.-allied Kurdish forces in Syria and Iraq.
There were about 60 attacks by these Iraqi militias against U.S. troops and bases during the first 2.5 years of Biden's presidency.
Frieda Parsi, executive vice president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, said on the Democracy Now! NewsHour, the Iranian-American expert on Iran continued,
since October 17th, however, when Israel went into Gaza, there's been more than 160 attacks just in these last 100 days. At some point, one of those attacks was going to kill Americans. And the president essentially accepted this risk, continued to allow Israel to bombard Gaza, in his own words, indiscriminately, knowing very well that the game of statistics was simply such that at some point the Iraqi militias would succeed and Americans would die. Now we are in that situation. Instead of raising questions about this entire strategy as to why we are putting U.S. troops at risk in order for Israel to continue to indiscriminately bomb and kill and slaughter people in Gaza.
Spencer Ackerman, foreign policy columnist for The Nation, shares Parsi's concerns.
The United States, while it might say that it's seeking to contain the conflict, is caught up in the logic of escalation.
Ackerman said on Democracy Now!,
these are the accumulations of choices that Biden and his team are making to involve the U.S. more deeply in this spiraling conflict, all of which could be stopped if the United States used its immense influence over Israel.
Polls show a majority of Americans support a ceasefire in Gaza. Scores of cities have passed ceasefire resolutions, most recently Chicago. The Biden administration, though, appears resolute in backing Israel's military assault on Gaza, with its continued supply of weapons, despite the International Court of Justice's recent provisional finding that Israel may be committing genocide. Ceasefire and diplomacy, not arms and diplomatic cover, leading to an end to Israel's occupation of Palestine, is the only solution. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
Overture, candlelights, this is it, the night of nights. No more rehearsing and nursing a part. We know every card by heart. Overture, candlelights, this is it. We'll hit the heights, and oh, what heights we'll hit.
WGXC. FM. The sports report from Camp Hill Hudson. Aloha.
Aloha.
Yes. I don't think the Super Bowl is being played in Hawaii, but
the Super Bowl is being played in Las Vegas.
Oh wow, Rachel, you did that sort of chop perfectly like a chief would.
Well, that is the chief.
That is the chief.
To cut Rachel's hand in half.
Okay. Well, I know football can be a violent sport, but we don't want to chop people's hands off. Otherwise, the quarterback's going to be you know, doing a chicken wing throw or something.
Chicken, 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 chic Well, that's not happening for me.
Okay.
I'm on strike.
So tell. So we've got quite a few people in the studio here. I'm Michael. Yeah, let's just go around here. Say who you are.
I'm Sean.
That's Sean.
I'm Dan.
Matthew. Brittany Hampton.
Silent. Silent but.
Rachel and Margaret Schulman.
Rachel and Margaret, check it out, Schulman.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And last but not least.
Kelly McConney.
Hey, Kelly and McConney.
Shady Pine.
Maybe I should cut my cookie.
Shady Pine is where you're going to be watching the Super Bowl. I didn't
yes,
know that.
Okay. That's Kelly to live.
So,
I agree.
So before you have a heart attack, Matthew, on the air, we have to revisit our last sports report from the previous week. Everybody but Dan was here for that. We made AFC and NFC championship predictions, and I think, hey, we were perfect.
We were okay.
Well, yeah, no, Matthew wasn't here either, right? No.
So hold on.
The four of us were perfect in that we all got them wrong. So, good for us. Hey, come on. Congratulations. We were perfect in our predictions, Dan. So, I know you're pleased. I think the only thing that I got right was I said the score would be 24-20, but the other team won instead. But it was 24-21 against the 49ers and the Lions. For those few people that don't watch NFL football and they're like, what are you talking about? Last week was the AFC and NFC championship games to determine who would play in the Super Bowl. And San Francisco 49ers.
And the Kansas City Chiefs.
And the Kansas City Chiefs, that's right, Dan, are playing in the Super Bowl. February
11th.
Sunday, February 11th. And Dan, we missed you last week. You are really our sports guru enthusiast. You also made similar predictions, right, for the Ravens?
I did, and I was wrong as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did, and I was wrong as well. I picked the Lions and the Ravens to go to the Super Bowl, and I was wrong as well.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? We all perfectly. Wow. And so now we thought, well, as much as I was begrudging making another prediction, I thought, well, we should just step right back into it. So so Sunday, February 11th, you said?
Yes,
so it's in 10 days from now as we record.
Yeah. I have a couple of comments of the championship.
Okay.
I watched Lions with Dad in Florida. I am so bummed and sad Lions lost because my Michigan uncles are really big fans of Lions, Detroit, and San Francisco 49ers. Win, but it's okay. But I love San Francisco. They have a good season, and we are very good sports. That other team wins, and also, I think it's a really good game. I really appreciate a good. I really appreciate to see a nice game.
So, everybody loves a good game. Nobody likes a blowout. It gets boring. But yeah. I see, Dan, you want to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to make my quick prediction about the Super Bowl. My quick prediction is I got the 49ers winning by 3 points. But I do want the Kansas City Chiefs to win because I'm for this Taylor Swift stuff that's going on with Travis Kelce.
Oh, okay. Well there was two things there to unpack because I know Sean McDonald has a very different feeling about who should win the game. And
I can see why he liked Taylor Swift.
We'll get to the Taylor Swift in a moment, too. But I want to give Sean a moment
Basically,
here.
I like Taylor Swift myself. She's a really cool singer.
Let's hold that for a second.
But she does have a good voice.
Let's hold that for a second, because Dan said he wanted the Chiefs to win. Is that right?
I said I got the 49ers winning by 3. But I just want to see the Chiefs win so Travis Kelce can get a big kiss from Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
So, oh, wow. We'll be soon.
Now, Sean, you are a Las Vegas Raiders fan.
Yes.
And part of the reason you wanted the Chiefs to lose is because tell us why.
Just they're their Raiders rival.
The Raiders rival?
Yeah.
They're in the same division.
And the Raiders didn't make the playoffs.
Nope.
And, you just before we went on air, you told me about the fight song for the Raiders, and you knew it by heart. And then I was like, oh, well, that's a great idea. We'll play the fight song for both the Chiefs and the 49ers, which we played at the beginning, and we'll play the 49ers fight song on our outro. But, okay, so you're definitely rooting for the 49ers?
49ers, yes.
Yeah? Do we want to get into score specifics? Sean, you have a score prediction or just 49ers straight up?
I'd say maybe like 25-19 maybe.
25-19. Okay. Yeah. And Dan?
I got the 49ers winning 24-21.
24-21, 49ers. Okay. So two 49er predictions. Kelly, you have any predictions? 49ers, Chiefs, Super Bowl. What Super Bowl number
Super
is it?
Super Bowl 50, almost 59, I believe.
Super Bowl 59?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
well, I got the Chiefs beating the 49ers like 30-40.
40-30 in favor of 49ers?
In favor of Chiefs.
Chiefs.
Oh, the Chiefs. Sorry. Okay, so two 49ers. Chiefs, do you have a prediction? You were saying earlier you like San Francisco.
Yes, because my cousin Dane and my cousin-in-law, Tiana, both live in San Francisco, California, and cross my fingers to pray. I want San Francisco 49er could you win. I want my cousins be happy because I love San Francisco very much. And there is a Super Bowl party at Cell hosting.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that.
Dan asked
and,
you.
And lost my voice then.
Dan asked you.
What is your score prediction?
I'm sorry.
What is your score prediction?
Final score prediction.
You said you got the 49ers winning by how much?
Detroit Lions have.
we're not talking about Detroit. We're talking about.
What is the final score going to?
What is the final score of the 49ers Chiefs game?
Do you have a Do you have a position, or you just don't? Just want the 49ers to win?
We hoping San Francisco going to win by higher than 100 score.
Okay.
Ooh, that would be a difficult task because nobody's ever.
How about Rachel Shake It Up Shulman? And then we're going to go to this mention with this kiss.
I know I like Taylor Swift, but I think I might duck up for the 49ers.
49ers. So four 49ers. Kelly's the Chiefs. I have to say, I'm not crazy about either team.
I don't care either, but I don't mind seeing the 49ers to win.
Yeah, I'm just hoping it's a good game.
I know I like Taylor Swift, and I know red is her color, but...
Well, let's get into that after I make my quick prediction. So I will just say I'm leaning towards the Chiefs. I'm not a 49ers fan, never have been. They've been winning since the 1980s, it seems. So very reluctantly picking the Chiefs. So now we want to get to this thing that Michael. You said about Taylor Swift and Dan was saying about the kiss. Basically, tell us the U2. Yeah,
basically there was a picture on the front cover on the back cover of the Post that said after the Chiefs had won the AFC Championship game of Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce kissing, and there was a caption that said "sealed with a kiss." The only reason why I want to see the Chiefs win is so that I want the 49ers to win, but I would be happy with the Chiefs winning because I want to see Taylor Swift kiss Travis Kelce again and have that be on the back cover of the Post.
Woohoo!
I do!
Her bet or her promise is if the Chiefs...
No, that's not it. I'm saying that every family member, whoever wins the Super Bowl, every family member, wife, girlfriend, or whatever, gives the player who won a kiss.
I see.
So basically, they kissed at the end of the AFC Championship game, and it was on the back cover of the New York Post. Yeah. That's why I want Taylor Swift to win again. I want the Chiefs. I would like to see the Chiefs win just to see the kiss.
Okay, now that is.
I have a question.
That is a very unusual motivation for one team to win.
It doesn't happen.
And make sure it doesn't happen. So you do want the 49ers to win.
Well, basically, I know I don't
care. I have a couple questions.
I don't care very much, but it would be nice to see the 49ers to win.
Okay. I have a question for Dan.
What?
If you hear me well.
I do.
What does that mean, kissing the championship? What does that mean?
It means that Taylor Swift gave Travis Kelce a kiss at the end of the AFC Championship game after the Chiefs won, and the photographer took a picture of it and put it on the back cover of the New York Times.
Well, that'd be a really nice thing to do because...
About the New York Post.
I love Chief, too, because...
Well, we're playing the 49ers fight song right now, Matthew, in case you didn't know.
Well, because I am a chief I'm a driver of the boat and club cars. They call me the chief.
Okay. Well, we're wrapping up here.
Thank you so much, WGXC listeners. Enjoy our sport news. And thank you, Dan.
Everybody say go whichever team they're picking. Go Chiefs.
Go Chiefs.
Chiefs.
Go 49ers.
Chiefs.
49ers Chiefs. 49ers Chiefs. 49ers Chiefs.
We will, of course, one of our predictions will be right this time. We haven't taken the same teams.
Whoever wins, I'd be happy for them.
Me too.
Oh, listen
to
that. Isn't that lovely? Whoever wins, you'll be happy for them.
Yeah,
me too. Thank you so much, WGXC listeners. Enjoy our sport news. Thank you, Sean McDonald and Dan Bustowski, for our news broadcast, WGXC 9.7. I am Matthew Harrington. Thank you for joining us in this lane. We'll be right back.
was Albert Eiler with Love Cry on the radio at WGXC and Wave Farm. Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC morning show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
This is Bob Von Hayes. This is Bob Von Hayes. This is Bob Von Hayes. This is Bob Von Hayes.
All right, Bob, camera is ready.
How do I look?
Can you lower your hair? It's a little out of the frame.
Okay. How's that?
Good. Ready to roll?
Let's roll.
Okay, rolling in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Chewing gum. It tastes great, but is it safe? This is Bob Von Hayes reporting for Channel 9 Buffalo WZTV News, filling in for the murdered Zach Elkibah, and I'm reporting live from outside of Ronnie LaHoyt's new wigs and gum store in Niagara Falls with a special investigative report.
Oh, Bob, stop.
What are you doing?
Behind you, turn around. Look at that streak in the sky.
What the hell is that? Are you getting this?
It's getting brighter.
Oh, my God, it's going down.
It's
going
to crash right into that building.
Wait, Jesus.
Let's get out of here.
No, no.
Turn around.
And the flames now, and the flame is rising to the ground, not quite to the morning mass. All the humanity.
You might say that Niagara Falls has been a bit on edge lately. On edge, or perhaps completely consumed by the fires of abomination and evil. The current state of disaster all seemed to start when the City Council, against the advice of the Carnivals and Entertaining Affairs Committee, decided to eliminate all professional daredevils because of their reckless behavior and for using the word devil in their profession. The emergency legislation stated that at least one daredevil a day must be gruesomely sacrificed by either mechanical or mysterious means if caught performing a stunt or doing anything at all. Not only did this threaten the daredevil population to shrink nearly to the size of the Tasmanian devil population, but some locals believe that dishonoring and disemboweling these once proud symbols of Niagara Falls has disrupted the entire equilibrium of the town and set off a string of cosmic calamities, spiraling non-stop towards total ruination.
They put used tires in our food, man.
To make things worse, the city recently decided to crack down on all the illegal talk houses in the area. Talk houses were anonymously organized underground safe spaces where people can go and say unsafe things. They were sanctuaries for all words taboo, offensive, and downright lewd. And they were providing a much-needed outlet for the anxieties caused by a wickedly chaste governance. Without it, the worst of every person percolates inside, walking time bombs of obscenity. Wherever you were, in a mall, mortuary, clam bake, or baby shower, there was a good chance that someone might spontaneously break out into a St. Vitus dance of potty mouth, and that someone could be you. It was reported that one man impulsively spewed a string of words so foul that he died right on the spot. On top of all this, a drought is drying up all the local water farms. The poorhouse is loaded. There are drugs everywhere, but they're overpriced and crappy. Each citizen is suspicious of the other. Everyone's rolling barefoot, and the mayor of Niagara Falls, an actual beast, whose name cannot be pronounced by any person born a human, living or dead, is on yet another violent killing spree. Local officials are doing their best to trap him and get him back to the office before the budget meeting on Thursday. And yes, as is usually the case when a population begins to crack, the town has become increasingly susceptible to all kinds of crazy conspiracy theories, all of which are true.
Sending gum out to everybody, and you could, like, see everyone chewing on this gum, and all of a sudden, like, started getting, like, hyped up. Yeah, it was super crazy. There's fucking military gum.
But none of this seems to be bothering Ace Dog, daredevil extraordinaire, who once did a somersault, blindfolded. Most daredevils who have survived this time of purging have fled into the forest, but not Ace Dog. He's too focused on preparing for what he believes will be the greatest daredevil stunt of all time. He hasn't told anyone what it is yet. And he doesn't even know what it is himself. He just follows his impulses, driven as if possessed by his DNA. He knows the risks involved. He knows how dangerous it is to be a daredevil in Niagara Falls right now. If the stunt fails, he'll die a spectacular death. If he pulls it off and lives, he'll be arrested and killed. Win or lose, it's death, death, death. But he's hellbent, pulled by forces deep within and beyond himself. Since the day he was born, he's dreamed of having a place in the Daredevil Museum, where all the great daredevils are enshrined in its hall of infamy. And this stunt, he believes, will firmly place him among the elite.
Daredevils like Signor Farini, Annie Taylor, Blondini, Mel, the transcended monk of the falls.
For the past 40 days, he's been building a spacecraft on the beach. He's making it out of wood so that nobody notices it. 50 feet by 40 feet by 65 feet by 32 feet, with 78 feet left over and 20 feet left to go. It has two wings, a crank, a tail, a crank tail, and a bucket with a propeller strong enough to blow out the fires of hell, if necessary. No one piece of wood is the same size as any other, and it's been tanned on the beach to the color of a dried blood orange peel. Every part of the craft is made of wood, entirely cypress. No screws, no metal, no fuel, just wood put together by wooden nails and wooden glue. And it's about to take off on its maiden flight. Today is the day, he tells himself. It's time for takeoff. The sun is high. Its rays work with the distant mist of the falls to fill the sky with countless rainbows. These rainbows, he says, are the souls of the many who have lost their lives. No, he stops himself. He doesn't want to be too dramatic right now. And anyway, there's nobody else on the beach, so he's just talking to himself. But he's not alone for long. At the ass end of the beach, a group of haggard ladies and gents staggers past an old thorn apple thicket and shuffles through the sand towards the spaceship. Their feet move swiftly, their arms confidently swing by their sides, but their faces are twisted in fear, and their eyes are bugging out. Why, it's the last batch of surviving daredevils who had taken refuge in them these woods. Why are our feet carrying us out of the forest and onto the beach, they say, as they are helplessly pulled towards Ace's Ark. Ace Dog responds, "The spirit of the daredevil inside of you is calling you to this place, this ship, just as it commanded me to build it." Then he gets really carried away. The spirit takes over, and he starts dancing. He starts singing, swearing, and insulting everyone, and telling dirty jokes. Coffin Rocket Ridge Runner. Once this passes, he lucidly explains what he believes to be true.
Use tires and our food, man!
That their blood is compelling them to fly away from this place of Armageddon and persecution, to start fresh in a new city, or state, or even planet. A place where nothing is too safe, and everything is a rip-roaring adventure.
Riverboat Mike, the Nabisco Kid, Ron McDonald, the Duke of Dare.
Here is the part where they climb in. They sit two by two in the belly of the great ship, as if on a wooden roller coaster. Ace sinks his hand into the soft root center of the navigation disc, and the craft begins to hum, then starts to rise. With a whiplashing swoosh, they are off. The vessel kicks up sand on the shore. It glides along the lake, then floats on the river. Yeah, it's a boat, too. It zips past the whirlpool, then steers itself straight to the foot of the American Falls, where the water smashes into rock. They brace themselves to hit the stream, but at the last second, the ship's nose turns skyward, and the ship shoots straight up the waterfall and into the sky. Onlookers cheer, hurrah and bravo, and give them the finger. This feat alone would have been enough to earn the title of greatest stunt of all time. A wooden spaceship flying up the falls? Shh. But it isn't done yet. The spacecraft begins to spin, corkscrew, jackknife, turtleneck, and T-bone spiraling out of control. It's headed right towards a dilapidated concrete building. Ace Dog, he recognizes it. He's about to crash into the Daredevil Museum. Ace and the passengers close their eyes and hope for another miracle. But not this time. The plane spaceboat ship slams right into the side of the building. There's a ripping sound of impact, then a thunderous explosion. As he had always dreamed, Ace Dog now has a permanent place in the Daredevil Museum. There are screams and sirens. Everyone is just running in circles, unsure if they want to check out a gruesome accident or run away from it. Suddenly, the ground begins to quake. Dark clouds form instantly overhead. From the center of the fiery site of the crash, a massive spring erupts from the earth, throwing water miles into the sky. But wait, it's not water. It's blood. A gushing geyser of blood is shooting straight up from the Daredevil's hole. It collects in the storm clouds, is pushed along by winds, and the blood begins to fall in mighty torrents from the sky. A dark red rain covers the entire city, filling rivers, surging toward the great national cataract. The Falls of Niagara is now a waterfall of blood, rushing over the brink. The city is flooded with blood, blood-flooded, blooded. The blood water flows through the streets, the hills, the parking lots. Everything in its path is picked up and carried in rapids until flushed over the mighty falls, sinking down below where the thunder gods live. All is cleansed in a baptism of Daredevil blood. The flood continued for hours until it was all eventually dumped over the brink, finding outlet in the great expanse of Lake Ontario. Whatever bits of blood that remained in the city were quickly lapped up by its bloodthirsty mayor. There's an old saying in Niagara Falls, never defecate in the same bed you sleep in. For some reason, I think that applies here. By morning, the water was clear again. So too were the skies. Everything just felt right again. A sense of normalcy returned. The mayor was back behind his desk, in his human form. Fully engorged on the blood of daredevils, he could get back to work with his senses regained. His first order of business was to lift the Daredevil ban. A bronze monument was ordered to be erected on the site of the wreck, memorializing the greatest daredevil of all time, ACE to the D-O-double-G. A few government-funded talkhouses opened up, too, just in case the need for them ever arises again. In their rooms, the children of daredevils, like the kid of the Nabisco Kid or the daughter of the Stolk brothers, are working on the logistics of their very first stunts, and sketches for improved barrel concepts, flight machines, and gas-electric hybrid giant rubber balls with compressed oxygen-filled air sacs and a place to plug in your phone. They are bending towards the light of their destiny as the new generation of Niagara's daredevils. The flood water has receded, yet the bloodline remains. When will this city learn not to starve its beasts, not to banish its devils? Without the bad words, beasts, and devils, all that's left is the desire to eliminate them, even when they aren't there. And that's far worse than the devils themselves. And so the cycle begins again, one that flows between order and chaos, nobody quite knowing which is which.
Next, we take off with Donald Byrd and Flight Time.